This is Do We Like Movies? It's a podcast where two guys review individual movies, sequels, and occasional television shows. In this show, we talk about our experiences with them, and we answer the question, do we like this movie?
Welcome to Do We Like Movies? I'm your host, Angel.
And I'm your genital host, Javi.
Jesus. All right, here we are, buddies. We are reviewing the 2019 movie adaptation of Cats.
No!
And before you ask why we're doing this, it was requested, which is why we put it on our schedule, so...
And there are dozens of you that requested this. And I want you to know I've already released the hounds.
I watched this movie with my wife, and I know that she specifically wanted me to say this on the podcast when I recorded it. But to the person who is responsible for us reviewing this movie, she wants to ask if everything's okay at home or if you need help.
I am a therapist by trade. I can help you. Because, we can fix this together.
Because this movie is not self-love.
No, I definitely felt like punching myself in the face a couple times watching this movie.
Yeah.
I had myself questioning. This movie made me question if I wanted to continue podcasting.
Okay, so let me say this first. Because I like musicals. I do like musicals. My favorite is Les Mis. Like, I love any adaptation of that play, of that musical, I will watch. It really is my favorite one. I like to give everything a chance. We've done at least one other musical on this podcast when we did In the Heights a couple years ago. I enjoy
Shameless
it.
Shameless plug, go check it out.
Yeah, I enjoy it for sure. But I do think I'm very surprised that this was made when it was made, you know, because it's like this movie was a big deal, like in the 80s and the 90s, like such a big deal. And funny enough, like my best exposure to Cats, or the only thing I really would think about when I would think about Cats, is for those people who watch like The Nanny, the Fran Drescher sitcom from the 90s, like one of the running jokes in The Nanny is that her boss, who's a Broadway producer, famously passes on Cats. And it just like is a running joke throughout that entire series. And I think beyond that, in the 90s, I swear to God, when I was hearing about this movie, this 2019 adaptation coming out, I was like, man, I swear to God, I feel like when I was a kid, they would show commercials for Cats all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but why would they show commercials for Cats all the time? Because it was a Broadway play. Like, you know, typically mm-hmm. if it's a Broadway play, you don't see it, right? Like, and I think we're going to get this later this year or next year as well soon, because another very big popular play from about a decade ago, Wicked, which is based in the world of Wizard of Oz, is going to be coming to theaters. My wife and I saw the trailer for it when we went to go watch Madame Web.
Oh man, you are just full of great movie choices this week.
I have been watching terrible films for the last several weeks. But yeah,
are you okay? Is everything okay at your home right now?
But you know what? The reason why I was like, I swear to God, I saw nothing but trailers and commercials for Cats. It's because in the 90s, in the late 90s, there was a direct to video musical film
mm-hmm.
that was, you know, that was a performance of Cats, I guess. And I just remember kind of the makeup that they do is pretty famous from that mm-hmm. commercial. And even if you haven't seen the movie itself, I swear to God, if you existed in the 90s, and if I were to show you this poster, in fact, I'll probably like show it to you like later after this podcast is over. Once you see this poster, you will realize that you have seen it at some point in the 90s.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the thing is, Cats was inescapable. It's one of the fucking longest running shows in like both Broadway and out in London too, in the West End. Like, it's like, this is just some of the accolades like I'm reading off of like its page, you know, where it's like, as of 2012, the stage play has generated a worldwide gross of 3.5 billion with a B dollars. Like, it's had over 8,900 performances, and that's just in London alone. Like, it's freaking crazy. Like, this is like quintessential Andrew Lloyd Webber, and you're thinking, oh, with CGI and the stacked cast that this movie has, there is surely gonna be something that does some sort of justice to the stage play. And I will tell you, my friends, no, there is not. From the moment this movie starts, it is Dead Men Tell No Tales as you go on this ride of to hell with me. It
Okay.
is, like they. This movie was so bad that Andrew Lloyd Webber needed an emotional support dog afterward because of how shitty it is. Just to set the stage as to what the journey we're about to take you all on.
Yeah, it's quite horrifying. And but you know, there are things. So this movie is directed by Tom Hooper, who, you know, came rose to prominence with The King's Speech, the film that he directed in 2010. He does an adaptation of Les Mis from 2012 that I love. I actually think it's really great. I enjoy it. It's the one with the with Hugh Jackman and Russell Crowe. They're like the two principal like leads, and Anne Hathaway is in it. It's I think it's really good. I enjoyed it when it came out. So I was like, yeah, sure, why not? This could work, I guess. I think before we say anything else, and I think I mentioned, I don't know if I said it to you, but I definitely said it to my wife while I was watching this. We live in an era now where animated films are more revered in a way that they probably weren't 20 years ago, right? Anything like Pixar does, DreamWorks movies, you know, the Spider-Man Spider-Verse movies, if there's anything that those movies have proven, it's that animation has can be considered high art now. You know what I mean? Like we can do high art animation movies. I don't know why this movie couldn't just be an animated movie where you got to animate cats that would just sing, that would actually look like cats, instead of what they do in this, which is horrifying animation, let me just say. Like, it's like they took the worst of two ideas and made something even worse out of it, right? These are horrifying looking characters. I'm not drawn in by the world that this is in, which is so weird because, you know, Les Mis like draws you in immediately. The visual style of that movie is so good. Like it is so good and so impressive, especially like there's scenes in that movie where there's like this big like it feels like big courtyards or big like town scenes where you feel the scope of where you're in, right? And this, it just feels like I know it came out like right before the pandemic, but this feels like everything was shot behind a green screen. It feels cheap. Like, why didn't you just do what during the pandemic, right? We saw the Disney Plus did the like full production of Hamilton, where you got to see basically what looked like a stage production, more or less, right? Why didn't they do that? Because what they end up doing here is hideous, and the colors are ghastly to look at.
It is not a fun experience at all. Like it is, and I'm still trying to figure out whether this is like if these were what's it called? Studio choices? Because I feel like if what's his name? Tom Hopper? Tom Hooper?
Tom Hooper.
I feel like Tom Hooper, if he would have made like if he would have had his creative's choice, probably wouldn't have been this. So I have a feeling that somewhere some and part of it is kind of going back to your to the piece you were saying about why you're going to skip or why you're not going full on animation. And I think some bigwig, some jagoff over at who was this? This was Universal? No. Was it
Universal.
Universal?
Yep.
Someone at Universal probably thought that look, if we're paying a shit zillion dollars to have Dame Judi Dench and Idris Elba, Jason Derulo, and wow, I just put those three on the one category, which is something I wouldn't have guessed. Or then you put Taylor Swift or somebody, you know, you have all these recognizable people. And I don't, and if you're really trying to like bank on their star power to bring people in, I don't think you want someone again. This is what I'm assuming this character I made up in my head is saying that you don't want to hide them behind an animated like cat. You know what I'm saying?
I think a big
They're.
part of it is CGI. CGI is a big part of this, like, or special effects are a giant part of this. You don't have that problem with Les Mis because the characters are not special effect characters. It's all in costuming, it's all in makeup where the style of the film comes in. If you really wanted to make this successful, why didn't you just do the iconic Broadway makeup and then and put it on sets, like, you know what I mean, like that and shoot it in a really interesting way. Like, maybe that would be the way to go, because again, what they end up doing here, I think the reason that cheap was the word I used for it, and looking at it on IMDb, if you were to believe IMDb trivia sections, two of the things that it says here is on December 21st, 2019, a mere 2 days after its release, Universal announced they would be releasing a new version with updated CGI at an undisclosed time, which, as far as I know, never actually happened.
No.
And the other one is in an article published in April 2020 on the Daily Beast. Visual effects artist speaking on the condition of anonymity said they had only 6 months to produce the early 2 minute 30 second trailer, and then only 4 months to produce the entire film.
Jesus
Visual effects artists were
Christ.
spending 90 hour weeks, even sleeping under their desks in some cases, to finish the film on time. This time crunch, along with the cantankerous working relationship between the effects team and the director, are the root of the problems with the film, according to the article.
There it is. You gotta love crunch time. Because when did this movie come out? Like,
December 2019.
what were
They
they?
shit it out before 2020.
Were they what were they trying to fucking make an Oscar run with this movie?
Probably. Typically,
And
if a
so.
movie goes for, if a movie is shooting for a November, December release, it is trying to make the Oscars.
So what they're. Oh, that pisses me off. Oh, I'm filled with even more impotent rage at the moment. So that means they were trying to do a quick cash grab slash like Oscar grab, and the people that suffered most were the fucking designers and artists all over again. It's the same bullshit you see in the gaming industry. You make these impossible deadlines, and then you have these scores of people who then have to crunch and put in 90-hour work weeks to fix whatever stupid problems you created because you're just trying to make a nut. Like, oh, I'm so mad. I'm actually legit furious at the fucking studio right now.
I love this where it says on IMDb, Cats was the last film of the 2010s to win the Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Picture at the Razzies, and director Tom Hooper's previous film, The King's Speech, was the first film of the 2010s to win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
Wow.
So he starts the decade with an Oscar winner, and he ends the decade with a Razzie winner. The
That's
highest of the
unfortunate.
high and the lowest of the low. And the crazy thing too is, like, I think the technique he uses for the like singing in the film actually is the same one that he used for Les Mis, which was the actors would actually be singing while performing. It wasn't like they were like they didn't pre-record songs and then just have them lip sync it. Like, they are singing it. And the way and I the best way I can describe this too is, like, if you watch Les Mis, like when there's a scene where Hugh Jackman's character barges into a courtroom, to end the song, and you can actually like see, when someone opens their mouth and they're singing, you actually see like the movement in their mouth that produces the sound that comes out. Like you can actually see it because it's such a close up to his face. So the music maybe is not a problem, but yeah, I think one of the things that we talked about that was so impressive with Godzilla Minus One is that it's a small animation team, and the script is so good, the characters are so good, the acting is so good, that even when you look at the special effects and you realize that they're not like the greatest special effects you've ever seen, the movie is so engrossing and the effects are good enough that you go along on the ride that the movie's taking you on with no questions.
Now, I also want it to be known that I think I've made it pretty clear I'm not a huge fan of musicals. And not necessarily in the sense that it's like, ooh, I think they suck, and just like, I just think there's a better, I think as far as conveying stories, again, like, I just don't, not a huge fan of musicals as a way to convey stories. I think they're fine. I think they're fun. There's definitely an audience for them. I think that's been proven. I'm also not, I also understand I'm probably in a minority here when I say that. That being said, I also want the audience to know that I'm not completely poo-pooing and hate all musicals. I actually give a lot of musicals a try. Just recently, I think my favorite musical as of right now is the Blues Brothers, because I went on Netflix and it's on there. Go ahead, check it out. And I think that was fucking great. I love the music and I love the acting, and it feels like a really long SNL sketch in a good way. So the reason why I bring this up is because I want people to know that I have been painted in a light where I hate musicals much, mostly because I say it all the time. But I want everyone to know that I gave this movie a legitimate try, the same way I tried to give in the Heights. I keep wanting to say In the Whites, because I piss this off one of my friends to no end.
Yeah, I remember us like kind of stumbling and doing that every single time we said the title of that movie too.
So I did the same thing with the In the Heights, and I gave it a honest college try for Cats, and I'll tell you now, it unfortunately, I mean, we'll go into it. Let's just go into it, I think, at this point.
It's a long movie. I'm not gonna go through the entire like thing scene for scene for scene. But we follow Victoria. She is a white cat that's abandoned, right, in London, and where she like basically ends up stumbling upon this group of alley cats, which are known as the Jellicles. Which,
Jellicle
God, you
cats.
hear that word over and over and over and over and
What the
over.
fuck does Jellicle even mean? Like, did you look it up? I didn't. I don't want to do that right now.
No, it says that Jellicle cats are a fictional type of feline from the book that this is based on. So I don't know that it is anything in real life.
No, it is a regular house cat, but more magical and more musical.
Oh God. I
Is
hate
the
the
first thing
names
on
of
Google.
these things too. Like, I'll say this, like this feels a little bit too old and white for my taste in musicals.
What, you didn't like the name of Old Deuteronomy?
No, I did not. And the crazy thing about this is it's got, like, again, it's got actors that I love seeing in other things. I love Judi Dench. I love Idris Elba. I love Ian McKellen, who's in this. Like, it's Tom Hooper. Like, I love Les Mis. Like, I should enjoy what I'm being shown here, but I don't. And it's just, I don't, it just doesn't draw you in, right? It's I don't know what it is that it just doesn't interest me. So the actress, the main actress in this, her name is Francesca Hayward, and I think that this is kind of her big moment in the sun, like in terms of in on film.
Yeah, because she's mostly a ballet and she's mostly a ballet dancer, and so she's mostly an artist of the stage.
Which I think might be a mistake. I think when you're doing a movie like this, when you're doing a movie adaptation of a big play, you want to pick someone who's more recognizable. I think Les Mis succeeds at doing this because the film is really revolves around Hugh Jackman, who everyone knows Hugh Jackman, right? Like Hugh Jackman, Russell Crowe, Anne Hathaway, Helena Bonham Carter, like a lot of the people that were in it were names. And I think this one, there are names, but there's a lot of names that are not as good. James Corden, I don't like anything that he's ever in.
What? You're telling me you don't like when he yells at interns because he thinks they spit in his coffee?
Jason Derulo, like I
No,
heard a
say it
couple
right.
songs he made that I
Say it
like.
right, Jason Derulo.
I heard a couple songs he makes and I like them okay. Did I need him in this? Did I need that? Please don't come for me. As fans of a certain famous pop artist who's in this. But
Oh, who are we saying
did
on
I
the
need
Swifties? Yeah, let's go.
did I need
Finally.
her in it? Absolutely not.
No, come at us. We'll fight you. We don't care. You can't. This is the little train that could, baby.
Apparently, this group of Jellicle cats throws something called the Jellicle Ball, which is, it's like a pageant, an annual ceremony. Wiki said it's an annual ceremony, but it feels like a pageant, right? Where it talks about cats competing to be chosen to go to what they call the heaven side lair and be granted a new life, which at the end of the movie is like they jump on a hot air balloon.
I swear to God, if this isn't, if drag shows don't have an origin from cats, then I don't know, because all of this sounds like queer coded and it all sounds like a drag show to me.
I'd probably be more interested in it if it was a drag show. Like, drag shows are in, like, drag shows are more interesting
Oh.
than this.
Oh shit, did we come up with something? Did two straight guys who know nothing of the scene or culture come up with something?
No, you know what? I have friends who are in the drag, yeah, who do perform in San Francisco drag shows. So I will not speak on anyone's behalf
But actually,
or act like I came up with anything that that I did not come up with. But yeah, I think it's the problem with something like this is it's so lifeless, right?
I mean, Cats is a drag show. Hold on to that idea. If no one else has done it yet, I think there might be something there. That
If someone else has done it, ignore me. If no one else has done it, shut up, everyone, and let me
yeah.
get rich.
Don't take my fucking idea. But I mean, honestly, anything like that would have made this a lot more interesting. But anyway, like you were saying, the riot. So if they win the Jellicle Ball, they become they get granted a wish, right? Or something like that.
Well,
And
yeah,
they
they get granted the wish to go. I guess to another, I mean, these are poor cats, right? So they want to go to another world, another plane of existence, another level.
Take me to upper middle class.
I think that's what it is, right? Like it feels like this, much like other plays, is about being someone who can fit in with the world and elevating, yes, as you said, like to the middle class or to the higher class from a lower class or wherever they're at.
Like, did you ever watch original cat, like the original stage play of Cats, or like,
Nope.
or
Nope. And
so?
I think that's why it's difficult to kind of talk about this because, again, all I know about this is the commercials I saw and the Netflix film that I just saw.
Because I guess it
So.
kind of like, if that is the theme of the story, is like, class mobility and getting out of the, as you and I call it, the trenches. And you ride that hot air balloon to upper middle class life. I mean, I guess it makes sense, right? Because everything here looks like post-industrial London, where, like, granted, we're only here to look, we're only here for technically what is one night, but everything looks very old-timey, and at the same time, like, you got your cobblestone roads and stuff like that, which is just how I assume London looks like at all times. But at the same time, it's like, when you got scenes where Victoria's like hanging out with the twin cats and they're like causing mischief in the house, it also looks much more updated too. So it's weird because it does hold this kind of timeless quality as you kind of go through. So, but yeah, like you were saying, a lot of the cats get introduced through their songs, right? Like we get. What's her name? Jenny Anydots, who I believe was Rebel Wilson's cat.
Yes.
She was like the fun-loving tabby who sleeps during the day and at night. Like goes after the mices and the brooches. And then Rum Tum Tugger, also known as Jason Derulo, he has the milk bar performance, which
I love when I saw him in this, and I was like, "Who the fuck is this guy? Like, this guy's so familiar to me." I looked, and my wife knew exactly who it was, and then I had to get on like IMDb, and I was like, "Oh, exactly that is it's Jason Derulo."
Which, his first song as Rum Tum Tugger is actually probably the best performance, at least early in the movie,
The
because
music is the
I'm
best part of this, and well,
yeah.
okay, some of the songs were really good.
Like, I actually like that first song that he sings, and I mean, it makes sense. You go and you get singers, right? Like, I guess that's also kind of the problem you face when you're making a musical for film. It's like, do you go get actors or do you go get singers? Because, or do you go get dancers? Kind of like, because clearly Victoria is like her focus, or her actress's main focus was the dance on stage, which is hard when, if that person has a lot of, like, you got to think, that's one of those kind of balancing acts that you really got to walk that fine line. It's like, is it easier to teach a singer to act? Is it easier to teach a actor to sing? Is it easier to teach a dancer to do both? I don't know.
It's really hard. Like, I mean, God, I would never pretend to know what the life of an actor is. But I will say this. I don't know if I've mentioned this on this podcast before, but when I was in college, I did take stage acting for 2 semesters. And I did not, it was not musicals. It was specifically, I mean, it was for people who did act in plays that were put on by the school. But specifically, what I did most of was scenes. And
That makes sense. And I'll tell you right now, it sure wasn't improv with how much you leave me hanging out there, you bastard.
was not improv. It was reading lines on the script, finding out what the subtext is, and being able to perform it. And it's very impressive. Like to me, like when I see plays and when I see musicals and stage productions, it's very impressive to me because there's so much. Like where you have to be aware of what your body's doing as well as what you're saying at the same time. Like you really are, it really is like a real life version of the whole where you're patting your head while you're rubbing your stomach. Like, I feel like that is what you're doing because, yeah, especially if this was like if the songs were recorded during scenes live and not like pre-recorded, it's, you know, it's very impressive to see that these actors were acting and singing at the same time. Like, it's not easy.
Oh, dude, I was a triple threat back in middle school. I was a singer, dancer, and actor. I was the best rooster from Little Orphan Annie that St. Paul's Elementary had ever seen. It's true. It is hard. And it's like looking back, it's funny. As a kid, I was like, I remember, 'cause you remember, I don't know if you had to do it, but I remember when I was a kid, that was like one of the things that we had to put, like the 7th and 8th graders always had to put on like a stage play or something. It was part of our music class.
Nope.
And I remember my 8th grade year, we did Little Orphan Annie, and I was like, and I went for the villain role because I'm like, oh, everyone's always saying I'm a good guy. I'm like, I want to see if I can be a bad guy. And so yeah, like that was my experience with acting in the stage.
I like how this movie is so bad that instead of talking about it, we're actually just talking about like different things.
Yeah, that's the type of movie. That's the adventure we're on. I'm sorry, should I talk about Bustopher Jones?
You know who I was in school? I was we didn't do performances like that, but often in middle school and then in high school, I would get stuck being the narrator when we would do like so if we would do like performances like in middle school during like winter shows and stuff like that. Or when I was in high school, like we would read like plays, you know, whether it be like Shakespeare or sometimes even something like I had a teacher one time who did Zoot Suit, and I loved putting on the voice for Zoot Suit, and he goes, "Oh, I think you're perfect for this, and you should do this." And I would do that, and yeah, I have an appreciation for that kind of stuff, but the acting part of it is much, much harder because when you're on stage, like you can never be like, let's say, for example, if you and I are facing each other on stage, we can never be just completely facing each other while ignoring the audience, right?
Oh no, yeah,
Every
you
time that
always got
you're
to
on
open
stage, you
up.
ha right, you have to stand in a way where your body is facing the audience at the same time while you're like there's positioning and blocking in scenes and that kind of stuff is really cool.
And
This
it's
movie
like
has none
kind
of
yeah, because
that.
you can't translate that to a film where you can just put the camera wherever it needs to be, and then just tell people to act.
Film is supposed to have that. Film is supposed to have the ability to where you don't have to be you know, you don't have to worry about the blocking and where you are in a scene. But the problem is that, again, it just feels so animated. It just feels like, again, they tried two different things and neither of them worked right. If this is an animated movie with true animated animals, you don't think about it because you're watching cartoon animals, right? And you're in the scene of it. Because something like recently I rewatched Lady and the Tramp with my wife, right? And I love that movie. Like, I was like, man, this movie is really good. Like, I didn't realize how good this movie is. Why? Because it's animated animals. It's telling you the story that it wants to tell you about, like, the rich aristocratic dog that comes from, you know, the world of being owned by, you know, rich people. You see, like, it goes through like they go through like, you know, what happens when people are expecting, the dog gets forgotten about when there's a baby, you know, like all that kind of stuff. Like it goes through so many themes in it and you go along with it because it's presented so well. In this, it's again, I think maybe you had to have an appreciation for the subject matter for it to for you to just dive into it, but I don't think anybody else did, right? Because this movie bombed. It's a mega
Absolutely.
super bomb, so I don't think anybody gave a shit about this. And I think it came
The
around to 20 years too late. Like if this would have came out in the late 90s when they were doing like the again that PBS direct to video production, if this was something that they decided to do like just a few years earlier, I think it would have been a lot better. I don't think anybody was begging for this.
It's not like he was writing off the coattails of a recent thing about cats. Like, I think, I don't know if when Les Mis came out, if there was like a resurgence of Les Mis on, Broadway or in, any
West Side
other.
Story. Spielberg did a remake of West Side Story a couple of years ago that I did not think was great. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was necessary. I get what they were trying to do because they were casting actual like Latino actors to play the roles instead of it being like white people, Greek actors or white people in brown face. You know, like I understood what the point of it was, but it's just had a because nobody's really begging for it. You know, like it just kind of comes and goes, right?
So you're saying the real move would have been to cast this movie with actual cats, just like I wanted The Lion King to be casted with actual lions.
Maybe. But you know, weird half animated cats with human faces is horrifying, and I did
Hey,
not want to see that.
there's a market for that, but you don't want to go, you don't want to see where that hole goes. Okay, cool. I guess we should talk about the goddamn
Yeah, okay,
movie.
let's go from the, you know, the I think you just talked about the Rum Tum Tugger, Bussifer Jones.
It's also hard because I hate James Corden.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I just don't like him as a person, and so I was like, oh wow, look, he's here.
Yeah, it's again, it's the actors. They're good, but they're not good enough. The main character is good, but she's not famous enough for me to really be into it. I thought she was good. I thought she did great, but who cares, right? Like, I'm
It
sorry.
sucks to say it like that, but it does kind of feel that way.
Yeah, something has to bring you, something has to bring you to the dance, right? Like, if not, then what is the point?
Speaking of, there's the tap dancing cat Skimbleshanks. I hate these names, god damn it. After being introduced to a bunch of Jellicle cats, Victoria also goes on to meet Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer, who are the ones I was talking about, the twin mischievous cats that run muck around a family's home. They end up leaving her, and they end up leaving her once, like, the humans and or once the family dog, I think it was, starts kind of chasing after Victoria, who ends up getting saved last minute by Mistopheles. Jesus Christ, what was that? Oh my God. So all the meanwhile, while Victoria's kind of meeting all these cats and being part of this community of, little vagabonds, of fun little vagabonds, we also see the, I guess, villain of the movie. What's his name? Idris Elba's character, Macavity the Mystery Cat, going around capturing the essence of all these other cats, including Jenny Anydots, and I think Bustopher Jones. I guess his plan wanting to be to use their magic to make himself a Jellicle cat, and
Yeah.
so he can win the
That's the
Jellicle
funny
War.
thing is like at first I thought it was like, oh, this is the villain. He's gonna try to kill everybody and he's gonna try to kill all the Jellicle cats. Isn't that what his thing? No, he actually wants to enter this competition himself and be the one that wins, except he wants to do it by nefarious means.
I'm like, we are about maybe 40 minutes into this movie, and I'm like, what the fuck is
Yeah.
happening? I'm shouting angrily at my TV, like, just shirtless drinking bourbon, trying to understand how to make this movie make sense. But let's see.
But is it but and he's the reason why what's her name is banished, right?
Who was it?
Bomb ballerina.
Bumble Arena, yes.
Yes.
The femme fatale cat.
Yes.
Yeah, when Victoria and Mephistopheles meet up with the rest of the group, we get introduced to the matriarch Jellicle Cat, Old Deuteronomy, played by Dame Judi Dench. And yeah, the Jellicle Ball, I guess, commences in the Egyptian theater. Victoria dances a solo in the moonlight. But she becomes distracted by some of the other cats, a former glamour cat, who's banished from the tribe.
Oh yeah, Grisabella, who I
Yeah.
think isn't she the one? I guess it was not, so it wasn't Bumbler, and I think it was Grisabella who had a bit of an association with Idris Elba's character, right? Which wasn't
Yeah,
that cat
because
named?
Taylor Swift was Bumblerina, who is a
Yeah,
different character. Yeah.
and
That's
to
the
hers
other
is
thing.
more of like a one-off, like it's more of a cameo than an actual like main character.
Yeah. That's that these names make it hard to figure out who the
I know.
fuck. I'm trying my best.
I love Grisabella and McCavity is like like they're she she's the one who was banished, and he's the one who was like who I guess was associated with her somehow.
I think it's because she sided with him, if I remember correctly, over like the Jellicle Cats. So they were like, if you want to live on the streets with him, go.
And the Jellicles seem like they're a bit aristocratic themselves too, despite the fact that they're a bunch of like scumbag. You know what it is if you talk about like if this is all about trying to move up into the middle class, you know, like the idea of like old 80s suburban white families and stuff like that. It's almost like those like horror, those J Tim Burton horrors of like what it like, you know, in Beetlejuice and in Edward Scissorhands of what it's like when the freaks like arrive in suburbia.
Oh yeah. And how the only real way you can move up is if you what's it
Conform.
called? Yeah, conform. Like that's a big thing, is like if you have to give conformity or be a part of the big conformity, man.
Yeah,
You're giving up who you
which
are.
maybe is another reason why I think this movie doesn't land well in the year that comes out. Like, think about the stuff that's coming out now. Like, it is we are not about conforming. This is the most like we are the least amount of conforming, and it's not that like we're all so unique. I think the idea is like we're also nihilistic, that like that we're aware that systems are bullshit, so we're more okay with just allowing people to be who they are than I think people were in the past.
Oh, absolutely. I think
The
we've
world
made,
is ending, so why should we give a shit what you're
yeah,
doing?
let people be happy. So yeah, while the ball continues, yeah, and like you said, I think this is where Grisabella is kind of attached to McCavity. And even though there's like a weird relationship between Victoria and Grisabella, Old Deuteronomy assures Victoria that she can also become a Jellicle Cat. So yeah, there's the part where Taylor Swift gets her cameo, interrupts the ball, which gives McCavity a chance to incapacitate everyone using catnip. Bastard. And then he demands to be made the Jellicle choice for that year. Old Deuteronomy says that he's unworthy. Seeing especially is how he's kidnapped a lot of the other contestants. You can't really be the Jellicle choice when you be made yourself the only competitor.
I mean, that's
This
a it's a it it, it is a good strategy.
It's such a kid like strategy though. Like I can see this story playing out in a kid's cartoon. However, he ends up, I believe he ends up, yeah, he ends up taking old Deuteronomy's powers. And as like the Jellicles are kind of recovering after losing their leader, Victoria suggests that Mephistopheles, who's like the magician cat, if I remember correctly, use his magic to try to bring old Deuteronomy back. Which he ends up doing, and this causes, and this leads to a dance between all the cats, where Mephistopheles dances with Victoria, and Macavity ends up teleporting away after freeing his victims, I believe. He ends up leaving. Yeah, he ends up leaving his sidekick cat, who is Growl Tiger. What the? We are missing a lot of context by not watching the original, I feel.
I think so, yeah.
So he ends up fucking off and kind of leaving Growl Tiger to deal with the rest of the Jellicles. Grisabella returns to the theater, where Victoria ends up vouching for her and urges her to sing for her true feelings, because Grisabella, I believe, is played by Jennifer Hudson, right?
Yes,
So I
which
believe.
it made me laugh because when we were watching it, my wife is going the time. She's like, goes all the time. She goes, I love the way she goes. I like the way she sings. She was like, but she is doing a lot in this movie. She is doing too much. It was like, and again, it's I think it's just the context, right? The lack of context. You're like, yeah, it does seem like she's like maybe overdoing it. Or overacting or over like just performing, and then you're like, because they don't explain until later like why she was like banished, right? So at first, like my wife is just looking at it like oh my God, she is just being really dramatic for no reason, and then later you're like, all right, I guess she's dramatic because she was literally thrown out of this group.
This group of cats. So, Jenny Hudson gets the big solo with Moonlight. I think it's Moonlight. Is that what it's called? Like the big song from this movie. So she
Sure,
gets
let's call
like
it that. Because I don't have the name right in front of me, and I'm a terrible podcaster.
and we just apparently don't give
I'm
a
sorry, I don't.
I feel really bad that this is like the most not give a shit we've been about a movie since New Year's Evil.
You know what, though? It's not our fault. It is the fault of the person who recommended me watching this. I will not feel guilty about this. This was a massive box office bomb. Nobody saw it. And if someone didn't
No.
make us watch it for this podcast, we wouldn't have saw it.
We could have reviewed the Clone Tyrone. But no, Javi doesn't get that what he
Oh,
wants.
I hope you're ready for next week too, because our next episode's also going to be garbage.
Okay. Hold on. All right. So Grisabella melts out Moonlight. So she gets caught, or now that old Deuteronomy's brought back, she names Grisabella the Jellicle Choice and sends her off to heaven. I mean, the Heaviside Lair and the chandelier. Now that it floats like an air balloon, thanks to Mephistopheles' magic, Macavity, in one last attempt to try to reach the lair, tries to jump on the rope but fails, and looks like he falls onto Nelson's column. Does he die?
I thought he died. I
Good, fuck him.
thought it was the end of him, yes.
Oh man. I'm not gonna lie to you, I stopped watching like the last 10 minutes of the movie. I checked out. I was
No,
freaking.
I watched the entire thing. Where I kind of checked out was like somewhere in like the first, like the second third of the movie.
You ask me about that first third of the movie, I got you. And I can carry a 10-minute conversation on just that. But by this point, I was like head on, no one, like lights on, but no one was home. All right. So as everyone watches Grizabella ascend, the morning sun appears on the horizon after everyone disperses. Old Deuteronomy welcomes Victoria to the
I did like the final number of the
Deuteronomy.
Deuteronomy. The
The
final
old
number.
Deuters. Just call her Deuts.
Dudes.
Sup, Deuts.
Her final number was actually good. I really enjoyed her and Judi Dench and Francesca's like singing in that final number. I was like, wow, this is really good. I wish the first two-thirds of this movie were like this.
I feel hella bad that anyone's like, oh, what'd you guys think of the singing? It was good.
It stunk. Oh, sorry. Yeah, the singing was good. Everything else sucked ass.
Know. Honestly, yeah, most of the musical numbers weren't terrible.
Can we just get to the end of this where we talk about how we feel about this movie?
I feel like we've made our thoughts known throughout the movie. It's pretty well known that we think it's a hot stinking pile of shit. But
Yeah.
it's Angel. Now, after discussing Cats, do you like this movie?
Hey, did we discuss cats?
No,
I
I
think we
feel.
have understood it. I think even New Year's Evil, we gave that movie the respect to when we were forgetting parts of it. We actually stopped a podcast in the middle, rewatched it, and came back to finish the podcast. Whereas this
Yeah.
movie will not get that consideration from us at all.
I am so glad we don't charge people for our show because this episode is
Yeah,
bad.
you would have to pay me to get me to watch this again. It was disgusting. Like, I'm actually pretty blown away that the guy who made a musical film that I love so much, that I own Les Mis. Like, I really do love that adaptation of it, and I still watch it like 13 years later, right? I think it's shocking that someone who did that and someone who did something like The King's Speech was capable of doing something this shitty. Like, it really is. Like, go. You know what it feels like? It's like if Chris Nolan did Dark Knight and then follows it up with like 2017 Justice League. Like, it is really just in another world of garbage. Like, that I'm again, it's just like, like, it's one of those things of how did this get made? And maybe now in this post-pandemic world, it probably doesn't get made. Or
No,
maybe it
this.
does get made because now this is what we do, right? Like, we're just shitting out movies, trying to make money, and we're not paying effects artists what they should get paid. And this is kind of what the problem is now, right? Like, movies are taking such an assembly line approach that it's just something like this just depresses me because you ever see that meme? That of NBA, a former NBA coach, Mark Jackson, where it's a picture of his face, and it goes, "What happened to the game I love?"
Yep.
That is what I think of, you know, in terms of films and musicals when I see this movie. I literally want to ask, "What happened to the game I love?" It
Well, shit,
sucks.
dude.
Do not recommend. 0 out of 10. Don't watch.
Yeah, save yourself some time and go watch the PBS fucking straight to video of Cats if you prefer that. I mean, yeah,
I'll
they
be
tried
surprised if
to
people
update it.
download this episode, to be quite honest. Like, I don't think, like, typically when we do movies that are this shitty, like, they don't get that much traffic. So
That
if
we
someone
got
actually, if you
it's
watch this, if you listen to this podcast, send us a message on our Instagram page. I need to know that someone listened to this. I will see the numbers of people who downloaded this, but I need to know that someone listened to this.
These are people that usually the people that do listen to these episodes are people that we care about. So I'm sorry that we made you suffer. But it's like people that actually take an interest in sport and stuff. So I just want to say to those people, hey, how y'all doing? Y'all drink enough water? Y'all taking care of yourselves? Because this is a hard one to get through. And this movie just fucking proves that movie studios are garbage. I'm gonna say 9 times out of 10. In how they
Correct.
treat their non-stage talent. And it really sucks that something like animators and it's something like artists and designers aren't given the proper due and respect, because as you can see, they are essential parts of making a movie, of making a story feel good. And if you don't have those people, you have just, or you tell them to fucking phone it in and put in a garbage effort. That's how you get this movie, or that's how you get fucking remember the first draft of what Sonic looked like, and that Eldritch Horror that we put where he had tiny thumbs, like little human hands? That was a studio choice to cut corners and give you something garbage, which then folded an entire animation studio because they fucked up the first time, because the studio fucked up the first time. And it's like now the problem is people can't even put the, like, animators, they leave this project, but it's like then you got to put this piece of shit on your resume and say, hey, I worked on Cats in 2019. It's like, fuck. Like, I really do feel for anyone, for those types, the guys that did have to work the crunch hours to try to make it look like, Sir Ian McKellen was, not having his hairs mix up, his nose hairs mixed with the whiskers on his CGI face. It was, God, I'm like, I did not like this movie, and I think we need to bury it. What we need to do is shoot it off to Bikini Atoll and drop a nuke on it.
Yeah, let us forget about this film and never speak of it again.
And I really do, and like I said, it just makes me feel for the people that did have to were then forced to work hard and were then forced to put in 90-hour days to try to make this passable. Like the fact that Universal then went out and said that we're going to have updated CGI is fucking laughable in 2019. Like, that's disgusting. You did a shitty job and you deserve the fucking bomb that got left. Why?
Yes, the
Because
creatives behind it do not deserve it, but
no.
the rest of y'all stink.
Why? Because you wanted to make a fucking Oscar push and eat shit. Anywho, that was our review of Cats.
All right, so we'd like to thank you guys for joining us for this episode of the show. Please continue to interact with us on social media, on our Instagram page. Download this podcast on Apple Podcasts, download the podcast on Spotify. Leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts if you can. Rating for the show. Please rate the show on Spotify as you can. And just try to get the word out there. Help where you can to help us grow our audience on this podcast. And send us recommendations because once we get to, the end of May, we will be entering the kind of summer blockbuster period where we probably will be in theaters more often, but there will be plenty of space for us to take recommendations on other movies for you guys to watch, until then. So we are going to continue in famous box office bomb land, because the next episode that we're doing is going to be the original Marvel movie from George Lucas, which is Howard the Duck. And it is a movie from the mid-80s. It stars Leia Thompson of Back to the Future fame, and I do think that it's going to be an interesting one to get through because I've never seen that movie ever, right? And people have been asking us to watch this for a couple of years already. So I cannot wait to watch that movie and talk about it. for the next episode of the show.
My favorite part is when Howard is going to look straight into the camera at the audience and say it's ducking time.
Jesus. It really is going to feel like, those Sony Spider-Man movies that stink.
Oh, you mean Madame Web, where Sydney Sweeney looked us all in the eye and said it's
Yes, I'm one of the few people on Earth who saw that movie. So, no, I will not be talking about it at this time or
There were
ever.
dozens of us, dozens.
So, I appreciate you guys listening to this episode, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Later, y'all.